Hi, my name is Frank Marasco. I'm a principal consultant in Microsoft Services. I'm also a core team member of the Patterns and Practices group. And in this video, we're going to be discussing SharePoint add-ins and how we can apply enterprise content management features that you might require, and have those deployed, to your SharePoint sites. So the agenda for this module is we're going to be demonstrating and describing remote provisioning of content types and site collections, working with managed metadata, and also we're going to be describing how we can implement list and library templates across your SharePoint infrastructure. And then finally, we're going to discuss document management automation. And what this is we're going to show you a pattern how we mimic the information management features in a remote timer job pattern. So some of our recommendations. So let's start off with, for a while now, we have been creating our SharePoint solutions, leveraging the feature framework and declarative approaches. We've actually changed our guidance on this, and our guidance now is actually to create those artifacts programmatically. Some of the reasoning behind that is, one, we have more control of how those customizations are applied. And if you think about what we had to do, right, with the feature framework and declarative approaches, if I needed to change that artifact, I had to write that update code in my feature receivers anyway. So we want to reduce that impact to our users, and we have extreme power when it comes down to leveraging remote APIs and creating these programmatically. The other thing too that when you're thinking about list templates and you use the feature framework, you've always created custom list definitions. Going forward, the recommended pattern is to actually leverage out-of-the-box lists, template IDs. We don't want to create new list definitions because that would actually cause a migration event if you ever had to replace that code, because once you actually retract that solution, either be it Sandbox or Farm Solutions, that list or library was unable to be rendered, and you would get an exception, that what we'll call the yellow screen of death when a user navigates to that page, because we have a dependency upon the file system of that XML template. And then we're going to talk about how, some best practices around, using remote timer jobs to implement your governance solutions. So, site columns and content types. So, what is this? We're going to show how, what this means in essence is we're going to create columns and content types remotely using SharePoint add-in techniques. Some of the reasons why you heard me talk about, the best practice, and not leveraging the feature framework and greater control of how those customizations are applied to your sites. But the other thing too is you want to be able to ensure that you have a require, that required information architecture applied consistently across all of your sites. So we'll show you how to do that. The recommendation here, when you want to actually apply customizations to your sites, obviously it's the remote APIs, but think about introducing a site provisioning solution to ensure that all the necessary and required elements and artifacts are available to all your end users. You really don't want them clicking on an add-in to actually apply those customizations all the time, right? So site provisioning is the key. We have a video on Channel 9 with regards to the PMP provisioning framework and our engine that will actually show how one can leverage that. So I would definitely check out that video. But for this demo purpose, what we're going to show is a console app that actually applies those customizations. So we'll show the pattern. So here's our logical design of our solution, right? So our add-in is going to communicate with SharePoint. A best practice also is to, you don't want to hard code all your IDs and your attributes for all your fields. So you want to abstract that away so that you don't have to, change code all the time. Your C# code will actually read that information and then build out the necessary CSOM objects to actually create those site columns and content types and do that association to the content type. So this demo and a source for this is available out in Patterns and Practices. This is a core.create content types. When you download this solution from GitHub, you're going to realize that it actually provides a lot more than what I'm demoing. So it does actually do localization at well at the site level. But what we're going to do is we're going to just demonstrate the creating of the fields and the necessary artifacts, and not so much worry about the site localization. So this is a console app. In order to work with SharePoint remotely, we have to use the client context object. So we're going to be leveraging that to communicate with SharePoint. We have some helper methods here. What we're going to do is create the content types if they don't exist, create the necessary columns, add the site column, create the list, and then finish off with localizing. So let's go into this create content type. So we try this example. I'm getting the content type collection, and I'm being a good developer where what I'm going to be doing is this is my content type ID that I'm going to use to actually provision. I'm going to check to see if it exists. If it does exist, just continue on. So this will actually show a pattern, right? If I later change this in the future, that I can actually not get an exception in my code, and I can just add in the necessary changes that I want. So if it doesn't exist, I'm going to create a content type creation information object and give it a name. And this is where I talked earlier about, probably abstracting this information into some type of configuration setting. We're going to create a new group. We're going to add the content type to the collection. Again, the site column is going to be created in this example. My field is called Contoso String. What you probably notice right here is that sure looks like a custom XML or definition to create these fields, right? And what on the fields object, we have a way to actually pass in a field XML string. So one of the things, right, if you're moving from farm solutions to the added model and you created your content types and your fields declaratively, you can actually reuse the field XML in your solutions and store those in a config file and read that at execution time. Underneath the covers, what this member is doing is it's actually ripping up that XML string and validating and creating the underneath the covers, creating the necessary properties to create that field. So it's not being creative declaratively. It looks like it is, but underneath the covers, it is not. So you can definitely reuse this pattern, right, if you're moving to the added model. Next, we're going to add our site columns to the content type. We have to associate this. Again, rinse and repeat. We're going to get the necessary content type by ID and the field name. We're going to get the field links collection, and we're going to enumerate that collection to ensure that the Contoso string doesn't that field doesn't exist. If it doesn't exist, that's that association that I talked about, is we're actually going to create the association. So field link creation information, I'm going to assign it the field, okay, and I'm going to add that to the collection, call update on my content type, and then execute query. Well, now I got that association out there. Okay, so let's look at the create custom list. It's pretty straightforward. In this example, I'm actually querying the list collection to see if localize exists, localize me. So this is just a sample, and I'm going to actually create it if it's not there. So I'm going to look at the count, list creation information, localize me, add in my necessary information. You heard me mention that, don't use custom list IDs or definitions. So, this is just a generic list that I'm going to be using as the base, and then I'm going to add the list to the list collection and finish that off. Here's the localized content type. So if you had and field. So if you had a requirement to to support multilingual site, here's the pattern to show how you can use the name resource property and the set value for UI culture. In this sample, we support three different languages, English, Finnish, and French. I'm not sure if this is correct translation. If it's not, feel free to post an issue out on Patterns and Practices and say, "Hey, Frank, fix your localization." But this pattern will actually show. So each one of the properties, the content types, the fields, each one has a corresponding set value culture so that you can support multilingual sites. And you have to ensure that you call the update and push changes. This is to ensure that, if you're already using this field and content type, that it gets actually those changes get pushed out to all your list and all your fields throughout your site. And then you execute query. So let's run this example. Again, best practice when you're wanting to provision content types to all of your sites, site provisioning is the preferred way to get those changes out. So that code executed. Let's see what we got. There's my localize me standard list. Let's check out our content types. So there's my Contoso document content type. I won't do that again. So you can see that my content type is out there. There's my custom field that I associated. And you can see that it's a site column. So that actually worked. So what this showed us is a way to actually provision the fields and the content types using a remote pattern. So let's move on to the next topic here. And we're going to be talking about taxonomy now. And what is, in order to use taxonomy in your add-ins, you have to actually reference the taxonomy assembly. You also have to ensure that, with any add-in project that you reference the client and client runtime. But the key point here is, if you're familiar with the server-side object model, when you look at the sample, you're going to see very similar references, right? So it's very similar to CSOM version is very similar to its server-side counterpart here. So you work with a taxonomy session, you get the terms and then the groups and the necessary term set and terms. The key difference here is that, in order when using CSOM, you have to load in the appropriate objects and collections. So here's a little code snippet of, how to work with taxonomy sessions. Again, very similar taxonomy session, get taxonomy session, pass it in the context. You get your default site collection term store. In SharePoint Online, this is already configured, so you won't have any challenges here. But if you're coming from an on-prem world, and you have to ensure that your MMS is appropriately set up to be the default. So you might want to look at that if you have a challenge running the solution. Here, I'm using client context load to actually load in all the necessary information that I want to work with and collections. So what we want to do here is after I execute query, we're going to actually enumerate the groups and the term sets and list those out into the console. Okay. Now, in order to create terms, again, we're going to set the context, get access to the taxonomy session, and in here we're actually going to create a group. In this case, it's my group two, and I'm passing in a new GUID. Very similar to creating content types and columns, where I'm setting the ID, I can do the exact same thing with taxonomy. And groups and terms and term set so that I can have a consistent implementation across my tenancy, or even, if you're in, again, if you're in a hybrid mode, the same content types IDs and term IDs are available in both environments. So that would also be a recommended best practice if make sure that you preserve your IDs and your GUIDs. We're going to create the term set called color, and in this example, 1033 is English, so I'm going to be setting the local to English, and then I create the terms red and purple English terms by passing in the new GUID. So let's see this code in action. So this sample is available under the samples folder, and this is the core.mms solution. So here's my console app, just to show that I have no tricks up my sleeve. Let's refresh the term store administrator. My custom group is not there. And again, console application, very similar. SharePoint Online credentials for SharePoint Online, network credentials for on-prem. Here is our helper method to actually create the taxonomy terms. and get the session, get the groups. You can see the GUID as a parameter, and create the term set with the necessary terms. Execute query to finish that off. To report out to the console, we're actually going to load up the taxonomy items that we want to query and display, execute query, and then enumerate through the necessary collections and write those out to the console. So let's run it out. Let's run this. Okay. That was quick. So there is the output from the console. You can see that I actually created the term successfully. I then establish a new taxonomy session and list out the appropriate terms. So let's see within the term store. Let's refresh. And now we can see our custom group is there, our colors are there with the appropriate terms applied. Before running the sample, in order to create terms, you need to be a term store administrator or have the appropriate permissions to that group. The other thing too is that you can actually customize the various description and contributors and members and all the necessary properties of the tag of the terms and control if they should be available for tagging or navigation. You can also implement custom properties. And then if you needed to for your terms to change the default labels or work with other labels or control different languages, you can also control that as well, leveraging CSUM. So you have a great deal of power when you're working with taxonomy in your solutions. So let's move on to the next topic here. And the next topic is document library templates or list templates. So what does this actually mean? A lot of organizations have a requirement to actually introduce predefined list templates and control what that list is like, right? So we want to actually provide a consistent means of provisioning those list instances across various site collections. Obviously the first thing that comes into mind is leveraging the patterns and practices provisioning engine to actually create those lists. But the one thing though is how do we give our end users the capability to actually provision additional lists? So the patterns and practices engine actually gets those customizations out to your site, but now we need to actually provide another way, just like we do with the feature framework, to provide that consistent manner. So we're going to show you how the add-in model actually will provide a similar experience, just like the list template capability with the feature framework. So let's run this sample. So this is a provider add-in. What I'm doing here, right, is this is very similar, to the previous demos, but now I'm consolidating into one solution. So I'm creating my content types, and my fields and all the necessary customizations that I want to apply. Best practice, don't do what Frank does here and hard code these. You want to abstract that away into some type of configuration file. But this is for demos. This is sample code, but please abstract these changes. Very similar to what we do in the provisioning engine. So I'm going to be creating two content types. I'm going to be creating two fields, a business unit field and a classification field. This add-in also supports creating two different types of libraries. So we're going to have a Contoso document library and an IT document library. The only thing different between the two is one is actually one list is using a taxonomy session, and the other one is not. So here, again, very similar code to what you saw. This time, we're actually getting the terms by name. We're going to load up the terms, create the taxonomy field creation information, and what we are going to, and this is an extension in patterns and practices, PNP Core, that gives us the capability to mimic that creation. And then we have, again, an extension method in PNP that's going to do all the heavy lifting, like wiring up the note field and ensure everything is wired up appropriately. So we got a one-liner here to actually create that. Again, very similar pattern with creating the content types that you previously saw. But let's go down into the library for a second here. And what I'm doing here, right, is I'm mimicking that out of the box experience or that what you had within the feature framework. So I'm checking to see if the list exists. I'm throwing an exception and displaying this notification back to the user interface that hey, a list or library, this is the exact same message that you would get if you tried to create a list with the exact same name using out-of-box techniques. So I'm just mimicking that. The other thing too that I'm doing is I'm controlling the versioning settings. And so I'm setting versioning enabled to true. Just recently we have an enhancement to the CSOM API, so now we can actually control min and max versions of the version settings. We have a sample of that out in patterns and practices as well. We call list update because we're enabling content types. And then, the other thing that you can do, right, is if you wanted to associate the default content type, that we're creating, we can do that too. Or you can actually take it a step further and actually create or associate information management policies if needed. So we have total customization and power to actually control that. So let's run this code. So here we go. You can see that I'm mimicking the out-of-the-box experience, right? So it doesn't even feel that I left SharePoint, right? So we have the same look and feel, the same theme that is applied to the host web. I'm actually controlling, the name and the description. There is the version setting that I was referring to in the code. And then here's our different document libraries that we want to create. You can also get fancy that if you wanted in your add-in is, implement a footer here. So if your host web had a footer applied, we can actually reuse that footer within our SharePoint add-in to actually ensure that the user experience is the best possible experience, right? And give them that impression that they really haven't left SharePoint. So let's go and create the Contoso document. And we're going to set our version history. We're going to create, depending upon what type of customizations that you're doing, you want to ensure that you send some type of notification back to that end user that, hey, I'm working on it, right? So, it all based upon what you want to do within your customization. Again, the best practice, right? If you're using content types and fields, lever, you know, create those during post-provisioning so that they're available, or you can deploy from the content type hub to ensure that those content types and fields are available. So if we go into our library settings, we see that our Contoso document is applied. It's the default content type. We could also customize this in a step further and remove document, right? If your business needs required that, you can see our classification column based upon managed metadata. Let's see if we wired that up correctly. Yes, we did. You can see that it's the enterprise term group, and there is our classification with some sample terms that are applied. Let's check out, let's go back to the site. Let's check out the library just to make sure that we have our version settings set appropriately. So let's go back in and we'll see our version history. And yes, you do. You can actually see that we got this create major version set. You'll also notice that when I created this, you see this 500. I would definitely recommend that you control how many number of major versions that you have based upon your needs. So with the new API that was introduced, you can totally control this setting. So let's stop this demo. From a logical architecture standpoint, we have our list template add-in that is invoked from the site when our provider-hosted add-in is launched. Again, have that configuration element so that you're not hard coding within your code, and then provision the appropriate artifacts that you need. One of the also things that you want to think about, right, is by default, right, when the app is launched, if you're using app-only permissions with full control over the site, that means anyone with access to that site can actually invoke that. So if you're using app-only, you want to double-check that that user has the necessary permissions within the site to actually, leverage your add-in. The other option that you can do is if you're using user context, obviously you would get that and just make sure that you handle the exception and display a nice little error message saying thank you, you don't have access. So that is by design of how the apps are intended to be used. So just make sure that you keep that into consideration when you're developing your add-in for this or playing with this sample code. So, information management policy. So, this falls into how we can leverage the remote timer job pattern to implement governance type workloads for either SharePoint on-prem or SharePoint online. One of the things, right, is that you saw that taxonomy, that classification column in the previous demo. So if you had a business requirement that, hey, I need to calculate expiration of content based upon date and that classification, how would I do that? Typically, you would leverage and associate a workflow, right, and deploy that. Another more advanced topic is to actually leverage I expiration formula or I expiration policy and deploy that to your farm, so that those policies would be available. You might be thinking, Frank, why are you using a remote timer job pattern to scan these documents? That's the how, but by default, right, in out-of-the-box information management policies, it's actually doing the exact same thing as the remote timer job. The only thing difference is that one is running outside of SharePoint, where the other one isn't. So the out-of-the-box information management policy, there's actually two jobs that actually execute to actually calculate the expiration date of a given piece of content. So the information management job, what it does underneath the covers is it's going to enumerate all the content in your farm, very similar to what we do in our remote timer job pattern, but we're just going to place that outside of SharePoint. So from a logical architecture standpoint, what we're doing is it's a, we have our SharePoint service. We have our provider-hosted add-in that will communicate with SharePoint. You have two different mechanisms for authentication. One is to leverage a specific service account, which has access to all of your content. That's a tenant administrator or a farm administrator in on-premises world. Or you can leverage app-only tokens to communicate with SharePoint and grant that tenant admin permissions. So what we're doing here is we have our remote timer job that is actually scanning the SharePoint site. So let's talk about the demo. So this demo is also this code is also available in the solutions folder, and this is the content type enforcement job. So let's take a peek at this. So this is just an odd, a regular simple console application. I have, my client ID and secret set. Here is the site collection that I want to scan. Some of the, what I would do if this was going to be an enterprise solution is I would abstract that, that site information, put that outside of the configuration file, could be in the central location that, the timer job reads from. Or you can actually leverage search based upon your needs to actually go out and search all the sites within your environment. This content type retention period. So what I'm doing here is I'm looking for a document, right? And the value is anything greater than, 60 days. So this could be modified to be, whatever value your business requirements are. So let's look at the, in order to use app only, obviously, remember to app reg new, and then grant the specific permissions to the client ID or the app ID in app INV. And in here, we're going to give it tenant permissions. Could be write, could be full control, but it does need to be able to scan all of your content in your environment. We're just reading from the configuration section here to get that those sections, site and content type retention policy period. We're going to build out our app only access token from Token Helper. We're going to get the access token. And then what we're going to do now is you'll notice that this is an execute query retry method. This is an extension method that's in the solution that you can reuse this pattern. What this is does what this does for you is actually, allows the client context, it's an extension method to actually implement retry logic. So what we're doing here, right, is, we're going to retry for five times if the execution fails, and we're going to pause for like 30 seconds. So when you're working with remote APIs, be it SharePoint or custom services that you're calling into, you want to ensure that you have some type of retry logic as a best practice. So here we're going to get the web. And what we want to do, right, is we're going to process this site recursively. And what this means, right, is I'm going to enumerate all the webs, right, and process each library that is created in that site. So again, our friend execute query retry. And here now it's going to process all those lists and libraries that are within that site collection. So it's going to get all the document libraries. It's going to enumerate each document library. You can exclude or include whatever you need. We're just going to write out to the console. And then we're going to actually look at the retention period and then apply the retention policy in our code. So here we go. We're going to get the validation date. We're going to get that from the config file. We're going to look at today's date. We're going to build out a CAML query that will issue get all the items that fall into that criteria. So we're going to be looking at the content type ID and the date of today, that validation date, and minus whatever retention period. So this is exactly what the information management and expiration jobs do in out of the box. Another option, instead of using a CAML query, you can also leverage search to actually discover this content. So that's just another option at your disposal. If we did find any items that have exceeded our retention period, what we're doing here is we're actually just writing that out to a console. So say, for example, you wanted to delete that item or actually, download it and ship it to another system as an archive, or notify the user that, hey, this is about to be deleted. You can perform those actions as you seem fit based upon your requirement. So all we're doing here is just reading that out. Here's the code that you can do to delete, or you can start a workflow that you have deployed or move to archive folder, etc. So let's see what this does. Okay, so this code just executed. So you can see the output is it's scanning the share site. We found 14 libraries. Here I'm just scanning everything, so you'll see converted forms. Can't have a presentation without cats. So I have a library called Dancing Cats, and basically you can see that, hey, this has been modified earlier than 2015, so I should apply that retention policy so I can actually delete things. So there's all my libraries that you see, and so this shows the power and the enhancements, with leveraging remote timer job patterns to perform this type of activity. So this solution could be deployed to Azure web jobs, so that it can be run on a scheduled basis, or it could be hosted in your on-premises infrastructure. You just have to ensure that you have that timing mechanism, or adapt the code to be implemented as a Windows service. Probably would go with our friend the Windows AT command to actually schedule that. So the next and final topic is audit settings. A lot of our customers want to be able to control the auditing settings across all site collections in any SharePoint deployment, be it on-prem or in the cloud. So that is the why. How do we do that in, December 2014 CU? We introduced the auditing capabilities. This is actually incorrect. We do have a cloud, the CSOM version of the Office 365 SharePoint Online package has that update in there, so that is available. One of the other things too that you might want to think about is when you're setting these auditing settings is sometimes the site collection administrators can control that. So there could be a need where, yes, the site collection administrator wants to be able to control that settings, but from your compliance team standpoint, they don't want that disabled and they want it controlled at the tenant level. So we actually introduced a new compliance center that what it does is gives you the capability to control and view all the auditing reports in one location from a tenant administration standpoint, so that your site collection administrators cannot control that. So this is another feature that is actually applied across your tenancy. It's only for Office 365, so this just gives you another tool belt to actually implement your requirements with a code-free approach. If you needed to actually set these auto settings, here's a code snippet of how you can do that. Again, I probably, if you do have this requirement, make sure that it's in your provisioning solution so that you can apply these settings consistently. You can leverage, if you wanted to, check, is the site compliant, right? Did the site collection administrator actually change these settings? You can implement something very similar to the governance timer job to actually check out these settings to make sure that they haven't been modified. But very simple code, get the site, get the audit property, set it to all. You can control it to edit. Etc. You call audit update. Here we can control the trimming of the retention logs and the audit logs, and then you finish it up with a content client context execute query. So this is just another avenue of how you can customize and apply various controls to your sites. So the recommendations again, we'll follow it up. Please create your elements using remote patterns. Try not to, when I say no XML here, don't do it declaratively. But what you can do is use some type of format, right, to control how those settings should be applied, right? That could be in JSON. XML file, very similar to what we do in the PNP engine. So go down that approach. You have more control. Both the CSOM and creating lists and libraries using the remote APIs is extremely powerful. I can control at will, reduce my impact when if I want to update those. Please stop using XML list definitions in your list templates. That will require a migration event because if you use the feature framework and declaratively, those files reside in that solution must be there because there is some dependencies, and once you retract that solution, the list will break. If you had to apply various types of governance solutions, think about remote timer job patterns, very similar to what we showed with the custom expiration. With that said, right, we'll finish it off with, check out Office 365, Office Dev PnP. We have tons of samples out there, various scenarios, over, I think we're about, about 150 solutions right now. So, go check that out, join the Yammer group, and I'd like to thank you for listening to me today, and hopefully you found it beneficial. So, thank you very much. Have a good evening.